This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It's Monday. It means it's time to bring in Brock. And I've taken some liberties from time to time, Paul, saying that Brock looks like Sam the Eagle from The Muppet Show, which is actually not true, because when I saw Brock this weekend, it was not Sam the Eagle he looked on the sidelines at the XFL game when Houston was hosting Los Angeles. As one man hurdled another, a clean hurdle, the camera panning picks up Brock in the background, and he looked like Beaker.
I'm going to let you dig this hole for yourself.
It's time for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Brock! It's great to have you aboard this morning. Brock, have you seen the clip yet?
Have I seen the clip yet, Danny? It's a meme, dude. I've gone worldwide viral, baby.
It's got to be your profile picture now.
It is an expression that I am very familiar with Brock. When he sees something he can't quite believe, he just gets these very big eyes, and he kind of blinks a couple times. You watched one man hurdle another. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was a while. It's been a while since I've been down on the field. That was a really cool experience, and I know we'll dig into it a little bit here with a couple questions. But, it was just kind of one of those moments. You see people running that fast, and it gets diluted when you watch it on TV. It's even diluted when you're sitting in the stands, when you're actually right there, I don't know, 15, 20 feet from the action. It was a little reminder just how fast and athletic those guys are.
Well, Brock, what were your biggest takeaways from the game?
Well, I think a couple things stood out. I think number one, the speed. That's what I'm always curious about, because, man, when you watch an NFL game, and again, especially at that level, the game is so fast. It is so reactionary. College is really fast. High school has gotten faster, but at every step it feels, and that speed amplifies. So I was kind of curious to see, would this feel like a college game? Would this feel like a preseason game? I knew it was not going to feel like an NFL game, but it was definitely faster than a college game. I mean, those guys were absolutely flying around. So I think that stood out, number one, was the speed. Number two, a lot of these guys have not tackled or taken hits for a couple years. I mean, you've got a lot of practice squad guys. Neither team did any live tackling or any live scrimmaging over the last couple months. So I was curious, would they just cut it loose? Would they go out and hit, and would they tackle? And certainly in our game, guys were bringing it. I mean, there were some absolute knockout shots. So, you know, I really loved some of the tackling. I think that's probably the two areas that jumped out the most, the speed and the tackling. And then lastly, I thought the level of ball was pretty good. You know, the execution and the tempo. And there's going to be guys that come out of this league and make NFL rosters. There is no doubt in my mind. Is it going to be 20? Probably not. Is it going to be 10? Maybe. But there's going to be a handful of guys that utilize the development of this league and absolutely make NFL rosters next fall.
And I think that's a big part of it. I think we all watch sports. We love the athleticism that these guys have, but we really like it when there's one person who stands out from all of the rest of those players. I didn't really get that vibe this weekend, Brock. Were there any players that you could see as potentially being XFL stars?
Well, the quarterback there in Houston, P.J. Walker, who was a really good player in college, he's smaller than Russell. I mean, he's barely, I think they lift him at 5'10 or 5'11, and I don't think he's quite there. But in that system, the run-and-shoot system, the guy is going to throw a lot of touchdowns and make a ton of plays. And I thought over the course of the weekend was probably the singular best player that I saw. And more than likely, in today's NFL, with as much as they like guys that can move and 3-8, he's going to get an opportunity. He's been on the practice squad at Indianapolis the last couple of years. But I think that, yeah, he's got an opportunity to really make his mark over the next few weeks. And lastly, I'll also say this. what was kind of fascinating in that building when we were leaving was the merchandise line was, I mean, half a mile long. Like, the merchandise store, and you saw this on the internet as well, you know, those hats, the clothes, I think people in this day and age more than ever want to feel like they're part of something, and they want to be in on it early. And, you know, the sales from even the memorabilia and the shirts and the hats, but just being a part of it, I think in this day and age, the XFL has a chance to capture that in a way it certainly didn't two decades ago.
Question two. What Seahawk veteran do you think will be the team's first cap casualty?
I don't know the timing of it, Paul, but the numbers just make enough sense to me that it's going to be Justin Brent. That you have an opportunity by releasing him, and I don't know when that is or exactly when his bonuses are due, if this is going to be in the spring or what have you, or when he gets fully healed off of that significant knee injury and they can do it. So this is not going to be something I think we're going to read in the next few weeks. Probably more than likely in the spring, but they have an opportunity to save nearly $8 million, $7.75 million on their salary cap. And with their other needs and having Joey Hunt there step in the fold and play at a pretty high level, and knowing that Ethan Posick is much more a center than he will ever be a guard or tackle in their system and what he played really well at LSU. Yeah, if I'm Justin Britt and his agent and such, I'm probably the most concerned about that contract. And maybe it's an opportunity to go in there and restructure it and feel like, you know, I really want to be here. I know that I maybe need to restructure this and make it a more incentive-laden deal to get back and earn my job, or just test that free agent market if he does get released and know that there's some value in a guy that's been a really good offensive lineman in this league the last few years, but just has a cap number that I think is a bit unreasonable here in Seattle.
How about KJ Wright, Brock? I thought KJ played really well at the end of the season, and I really like KJ a ton as a player. He signed a 2-year contract that was really structured more like a 1-year deal. Do you see them re-upping? I think his salary is going to be in the neighborhood of $7 million this season.
Yeah, I think he'd be another guy, Danny, that I'd be if I'm in his camp, and I think we all are because of the human being that KJ is. I mean, he's absolutely one of the great Seahawks in that way, and it may have played himself into the ring of honor, to be honest with you, as far as his productivity and his tackles and his stats when it's all said and done in the next couple decades and just being an incredible human being. But if I'm in his camp, I'm probably equally concerned about that number. Remember, he went to the free agent market a year ago, you know, with that knee and everything else, and the free agent market said thanks, but no thanks. You're going to be a better fit, and Seattle's going to love you more than anybody else did on the market that wants young, that wants hungry, that wants fast. Look at the linebackers that have been drafted and paid, you know, over the last couple of years. They all have one dynamic, and that is speed, and that is not right now, I think, the strength of KJ's game. So, again, is that another conversation? Is that restructuring that deal again? Is it finding a number that I think is a little bit more reasonable than $7 or $8 million? I think that's a conversation. But if I'm in KJ's camp, yeah, I'm concerned about that cap number, his age, and where he would be in this free agent market.
I think there's only one more potential cut, Brock. I think it's our favorite Scottish legend, Bradley McDougald, who is due $5.4 million this coming season. You know, given what they have in Marquise Blair, I feel like that might be a guy they move on from as well.
Yeah, and it's typical, I think, when you're looking at those veteran guys, and they get so frustrated about it, and rightfully so. They feel like, man, I've put in all of this service time. I've done all of this work and this quality play. You know, now I get to reap the benefits of the back end of those contracts. So players do get frustrated about that. But I think you've also got to realize when you're a veteran player, with significant injury that Bradley and KJ have dealt with, and in particular both of those guys, their knees and the inability to play, you know, more than likely full seasons and certainly practice full seasons, that those numbers start to get to a place where they're more of a penalty than they are a benefit. And we've seen that played out in a bunch of places, and more than likely we'll see that played out here in Seattle.
Question three, Brock. Actually, I'm going to have Paul ask this one because I refuse to ask Brock questions about dudes' bodies.
Well, I mean, listen, some people are comfortable talking about other people's bodies and other people aren't.
Some people are obsessed with it.
Listen, you know what? I'm actually a lot like Brock on this front. I can appreciate a good bod, Brock. So you're a bod guy. I'm a bod guy. Are you a hair guy? Do you appreciate good hair like mine?
Of course I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What did you think of Russell Wilson's latest haircut from this photo shoot that he did with Ciara over the weekend?
Zoolander? Zoolander?
Blue Ferrari. No, it's Blue Steel.
Blue Steel.
My bad.
And Magnum.
It's the same look.
Like Danny, you think you hate it. Lydia's got it, and at least got me on mute, probably Paul as well. Let me see, get very uncomfortable with this. But this is the weird season of Russ.
Y'all a bunch of haters. Off-season Russ. Let Russ cook. Let Russ's hair cook. Leave it alone.
We need an off-season better slogan than that, Lydia. We need to find something, because Let It Cook has too much like closeness and continuity with football. So we got to figure something out in his off-season where he does. Where there is simply no thing. The dude just goes weird. He just does whatever he wears, what he wants. He grows the hair out. You know, he does what he wants to. He travels the world. He's got X number of new businesses that he's going to be funding. Like, it just gets a little, Paul, this will be your first real experience with this. You know, this is not July through January, February. You get one Russell, and the dude is an absolute machine. And then come, you know, late January, if they're not in the playoffs, February through April, May, we get, you know, some fun shots, like the Zoolander shot we got to see over the weekend.
I have a very strong take on this, and I know how much time it takes for somebody with curls to get your hair straightened out like that. I love the look. I thought he crushed it. Like, seriously, I thought he looked devastatingly handsome. I have no problem saying that. I thought that hair looked great. I thought it was great. Like, if he can do that again, do it. It looked great.
It looked like a man who spent an hour on his hair.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, there's
an
a
hour?
Lot that's wrong. Yes, I think
an
it took
hour?
An hour. I think it took an hour
oh,
to get that.
Maybe he's just trying to walk a mile in our shoes and try to understand what it's like. I mean, if anything, that's sensitive.
Yeah. Lydia, that's a really good point. Lydia's the one that keeps this from going full-blown overboard into. It just looked like he went and put his head under one of those, the perm dryer things, like for a good solid hour.
Danny, here's what I know, and here's what you know, that if Russell was in the locker room with Tobeck and Hutch, and Walter Jones, like them Hall of Famers, but especially Tobeck. Tobeck would take all of these pictures and all of his looks, and like every OTA, he would have a different lineman come in and dressed in that hairdo and absolutely make fun of all of these crazy looks. We saw it last year with the video with Fluke, right? In bed and Lockett and all the fun that they had with that stuff. I hope that there are some guys on that team that can just poke fun and have fun with their very eccentric offseason quarterback.
Brock, it's always good to talk to you. And what he said there was, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much to Toyota Puyallup for allowing this to happen. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Brock, we're going to see you in the studio tomorrow.
Look forward to it, boys. See you.
That is Brock Huard. Do you think
you're
so think
mean
I got
to
it?
Brock? You're so mean to him. You're
got to be
so mean to him.
Somebody's got to be.
He's
everybody
the nicest
around
person.
Here. Oh, of course he is.
Wait, I mean, I feel like I'm one of those people. I'm more of a retaliatory trash talker, and I feel like, man, you just take broadsides against him, and he does not fire back. I actually want him to fire back at some point.
Yeah, maybe he will, or maybe that's what makes it so fun is that when you know someone who is so kind and good-hearted and like just a. Brock is one of the best-natured people that I've ever been around. And honestly, like, him seeing the best side of people, like, he works really hard. And taking cheap shots at a person like that is unbelievably fun. It's like you're landing punches with someone who's constantly leaning forward. Because he just is so ready to see the good in everyone. And you're like, whoa, that one got him right on the chin.
Him making the beaker noise this morning made my morning. That is the best thing I will hear all day.
And it is, if anybody's seen the clip of Brock as he reacts to the man jumping up and over it. It is a very, very wide-eyed, like, It is time for our next category.
Welcome to the
2020
Hawkskers.
This category is best individual play, and we have a number of suggestions here, starting out with Tedrick Thompson. Yes, Tedrick Thompson, who finished the season on injury reserve. Yes, Tedrick Thompson, who made many people curse his name over the course. Yes, that Tedrick Thompson, he had one of the great plays of this season.
From the shotgun, takes the snap. Goff has time, throws inside, almost picked off again. Off the fingertips of Everett, the tight end, diving for the ground, driving for the ball on the ground, that is, was Tedrick Thompson. And again, back-to-back plays where the Seahawks secondary almost ended this game with a pick. Wait a minute. Everybody on the sidelines, Pete Carroll says, hey, he threw the flag down. He said, our guy got his hand under that.
After reviewing the play, the defender had his hands underneath the ball.
As someone, that was my first game to CenturyLink Field that night, and I'm never going to forget that interception. So this one's, I think, a strong one because the crowd lost its mind when that was officially ruled an interception. The team lost its mind. It was a really fun moment. Now, it did take a missed field goal for the Seahawks to ultimately win that game, but for me, that was like one of my first experiences here in Seattle, and I will not forget that play anytime soon. It was a great catch.
My favorite part about that was the crowd's realization during the timeout, because we now go to commercials, which I think we've talked about, which I hate. They go to commercials during the replay reviews. So you're not actually, when you're watching the game at home, you're not seeing and you're not hearing an analysis of what happens, but they're showing it on the scoreboard there.
Right.
And you heard Seattle's crowd without anything being cued in, without any sort of announcement. You heard them see, oh my gosh, he caught the ball. You heard them recognize he's got this interception before it. And I'm not going to say, oh, it's proof of how smart the Seahawks crowd is. I do think it's proof of how glued in they were to the entire process. And to see a celebration start before there was an actual announcement was really cool.
It was a fun moment. And I think for some people, too, that might have been a sign that, hey, this season has some legs. This season might go somewhere. It was the first of many very, very close moments and close finishes in games. But that was a heck of a catch. I did think at that point in time, Danny, that maybe, just maybe, Tedrick Thompson had developed a little bit of confidence that maybe would carry him forward. And I think we didn't see him on the field like the next week or the week after that. He vanished very soon after that play.
Yeah, not only that, he had a big pick in the end zone against the Cleveland Browns, too. Now, it was a ball that Shaquille Griffin had kind of reached in and tapped. He had a couple of big picks. It was just some of the other plays that happened. Our candidate number two for Seahawks' best individual play of the year.
With a slot on the left, here comes the blitz. Russ steps up as the Hawks pick it up. Throw deep. Got a man out there chasing it. What a catch! Holy catfish! What a catch! Down to the 25-yard line. Josh Gordon diving on the end of his fingertips. Baby, what a catch! And welcome, Mr. Gordon. A huge gain in the Seahawks in Carolina territory, a 59-yard reception.
First off, catfish, delicious, especially if you get some, you know, sugary, if you fry it the right way, it's really good. Anyway, sorry, got distracted for a second. That catch was awesome. That was a unbelievable, fingertips-only kind of catch by Josh Gordon. And it's a shame because it felt like in that game against the Panthers, he was finally figuring it out, becoming a true part of the offense. And then all of a sudden, he was not only busted for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policy, but he was also someone who was suspended, too, for violating the substance of abuse policy. And now you got to wonder, all right, what's next? Because, you know, part of me thinks, Danny, if it was just the PED suspension, that maybe the Seahawks going forward would be thinking to themselves, you know what? We're going to give this another fly next season. We're going to get him back after 4 weeks or so because it's his first PED violation. Now I don't know what's next for him.
We'll see what happens. I think that if he's eligible to return, Seattle would love to have him back. I don't think you can count on him being back at this point. However, he showed what a difference a third receiver can make.
He really did.
As we talked about the big board, or we're going to call it the Schmedium board for now.
Schmedium.
I think that was the best. If you've got a
shot
suggestion. Yeah, just Schmedium.
No, it's a shot at me. Let's be honest. You guys all are intimidated by my tight little T-shirts, but anyway.
That's not true. The Schmedium right now, it's a little bit smaller than a medium-sized board. If somebody's got a better suggestion for what we call our board regarding off-season acquisitions, text it into 710-710. Third wide receiver. I think that's on the list.
Yep.
Cornerback, pass rush. And then I think it is third wide receiver, not because that's the biggest need, but I think that you see it, a huge opportunity that's there.
Yep.
Candidate number three in our play of the year. And this one is put in specifically, I believe, as kind of a de facto shot at me, because there's one player that I have inexplicably complained about, And here is his only catch of the season.
The Niners have blitzed almost every play in this drive. Let's see if they do it again. Manning up. Blitz is coming. Russell scrambles right. Looks, throws. Ball is caught. First down. Inside the 1 yard line. Are you kidding? John Ursua gets the ball back inside. Inside the one. An 11-yard gain.
The John Ursua, Danny. In your face. In your face.
I think the funniest part about this is that people think that I have some sort of antagonism toward John
Ursula. Well, I mean, let's be honest, you do. So.
No, I just don't want to hear about how he needs more opportunities.
He does. Look at that catch he just made. Wow.
If he gets more chances, great, and I hope it pans out. There's nothing. But to go into next season, and every week you'd have, when's John Ursula going to get out there? I don't know. Whenever a seventh-round wide receiver normally gets, I don't think that they're criminally negligent and overlooking the possibility of John Ursua. But, yeah, so his one catch this season made our list of potential best plays of the year.
John Ursua is like a more talented Jerry Rice. I think most people would agree.
Oh, God.
So I think you have to stop with your just complete shaming and disregard for the glory of Ursua, who can play every position, including kicker.
Well,
I just made that up.
Here is the fourth, and not necessarily final, because we'll let you submit your own candidates, the fourth nomination for Seahawks Play of the Year.
Luke Wilson in motion on the left side. Russell, play fake, steps back, has time, still surveying the field. Now he rolls left. Now he scrambles. Now he's going to throw to the back of the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch. Did he get his feet in? He did! Touchdown, Seahawks! The littlest guy on the field climbed the ladder, kept his toenails in, and Tyler Lockett put six on the board for the Seahawks from 13 yards out.
That was a fun game. You don't often hear an NFL fan base do the oohs and the ahs and the oh that an NBA crowd will make, but in that moment you could hear it because everyone, I think, thought that throw was out of bounds.
It's very rare that you see in today's NFL where you see a play. When I saw it, I was like, there's no way his feet are in. Just the positioning of the bodies, the velocity it was thrown at, and where it's like there's no chance.
None.
And then when you see he did, it's one of those moments of disbelief. And honestly, like, those are the best parts about sports.
Yep.
If you have a different candidate, a different nominee for Seahawks Play of the Year, you can text it into 710-710. That's powered by Coors Light. We are going to continue on our wheel of non-FL comes next, and that includes the Codebreaker. Is that really what we're deciding?
Operation Codebreaker.
Okay, we're going to figure out if that's actually the name for the Trashtros and their stealing of
Trash
different signs.
Tros.
It's coming up next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I gotta say, I've appreciated the old Kanye today. Lydia, a couple drops bringing us back in, a little Through the Wire.
Through the wire.
We had them with the Dilated Peoples earlier. Loving it. It's
also
is
a
Danny.
Shout out to the Astros, too. It's not Through the Wire technically, but you know, there's a reference there.
I didn't even get that.
It's settled. It's settled sometimes.
It's very good. That's very good. This is our segment for the non-FL, and we will get back to the Seahawks and who won Play of the Year at a point a little bit later on. But A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager and a guy who was, fired in the wake of the sign-stealing scandal, which is Codebreaker is what is actually being used?
Operation Codebreaker, yes.
Now, the one thing I'll say is that at least we haven't affixed a gate to this. I hate the laziness of media. Any cheating scandal becomes slash gate.
Nickname gate.
Spy gate, deflate gate. What, there was the skate gate a couple of years ago when the Canadians were talking to Boot how they weren't given their gold medal. Like, all of the gate is played out. We're better as a country. We don't need to constantly rely on the suffix of a hotel that was used in a political scandal. We can do better than that.
We need to hit rock bottom with gate, and I think everyone will stop. So something needs to happen with a gate, and then it'll be over.
A.J. Hinch was interviewed by Tom Verducci, and it's his first public statements regarding it. And as far as apologies go, I thought it was a pretty solid appearance. There is one quibble that I'll have, but he talked about sort of who was responsible for it.
You know, it happened on my watch, and I'm not proud of that. I'll never be proud of it. I didn't like it. But I have to own it, because in a leadership position, I mean, the commissioner's office made it very, very clear the GM and the manager were in position to make sure that nothing like this happened, and we fell short.
He didn't name names.
Nope. Should he name names?
No. I don't think he should, but those players should think they're lucky stars that that guy was their manager. And look, I haven't really interacted with AJ Hinch that much, but when I was in Houston, I thought he was about as stand up as it gets for managers. I thought that over time he got a little arrogant. I think the entire organization got a little arrogant over time. I think that's natural when you win as much as you do. But of all the people to look at in this entire thing, it's hard for me not to look at Jeff Luhnow, who is an incredibly intelligent person and has really, I think, acted very shady in the wake of all of this.
Now, there's the bigger picture question here is how much we hold supervisors accountable for the actions of people working for them. And I would extend this to say that there are people that still feel very strongly about what Pete Carroll knew or should have known while he was at USC. I've always looked at it that the issue with Reggie Bush at USC, I do not blame Pete Carroll for not knowing. I don't think it's a coach's job to regulate the extracurricular relationships or what connections a family might have. I just don't, I don't think it's realistic. And there's in some ways that I don't think that that part is appropriate. You can educate your guys and you can tell them what to do. But the idea that you should know that an agent had given his parents use of a house in San Diego, I never found it believable. So there's part of that combined with AJ Hinch. How much should a manager know about what's going on? I want to say in his dugout, but in this case, it's in the hallway leading from his dugout to the clubhouse in a specific trash can.
What do you do about it? Because it did feel like it was one of those things that got to a point where there was no stopping it. I mean, if these players
He broke the monitor twice.
I mean, that's a passive-aggressive way of handling things, and he probably should have been more direct with how he did it. But, I mean, if he tells them to stop, what are they going to do? Stop? Don't managers have close to zero power as far as coaches go? Like, they're not making anything. These players are clearly more valuable than him. They can replace him much more easily than you can replace an NFL coach. So what can he really do? And if the entire team is doing this, isn't it your job more so to maintain the, I think, morale of the clubhouse as opposed to doing things the right way? And I hate to say it like that, but I just don't think that if Hinch stood up on a soapbox and said, okay, guys, like, let's stop with the trash can banging. It's been a nice run.
Next person that bangs a trash can, I'm going to go stuff you in that trash can.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's I don't know what he could have done to stop everything after it got to a certain point. Like, I think it was just going to continue no matter what. He's one guy.
This is the funniest part, is that he may not have initially known even what was happening.
So the commissioner's report said there was, it started with, in terms of relaying signs, there was whistling, there was clapping, there was yelling. Eventually, they settled on the system with the banging of the trash can. You're the manager. You're in the dugout. You have to be hearing the banging going on, correct?
Yeah, no, I heard it. I heard it. I don't think you process it right away. It's like you hear a lot of things, but I heard it.
So at some point, though, you begin to process what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And you said, obviously, you know it was wrong. The question is, why don't you step in at that point and say, guys, knock it off?
I wish I would have. I really do. I think that's a big question that I'm going to process over what's now a season-long suspension. I think it's something that I've continued to think about. Certainly through the investigation and when you have to openly talk about it. I wish I would have done more. Right is right and wrong is wrong, and we were wrong.
I hear that, and I mean, I do believe him. Did you believe him?
Did you believe
his apology?
I actually honestly do, and I come away from it thinking I'd hire AJ Hinch as a manager. I mean, I'm not sure if he'd be the right fit, but it's not like I would disqualify him for consideration as a manager for a team based on that, because I find what he said pretty believable. And the question that I don't think we ask enough when it comes to something, would it happen again? Is the guy just telling you sorry and then he's going to go out and do it again? And I didn't get that sense. I got a sense that AJ Hinch found himself in a situation that he didn't do enough to stop. And I could see how you get in that spot where you're still the same person you were, and it's not like you're a bad leader or anything, but you just make a series of compromises because you don't want to derail or fight what's going on. And you look back at it, and you're like, how did I possibly allow that to happen? I find him very believable.
I think he's telling the truth here, and I think the problem is that a lot of people are frustrated by what the truth is. I really don't think that there was much that he could have done to stop all of this. I think once it was out of the box, I mean, like, you have an assistant manager that's leading this. You have a bunch of players who are doing it, and they're probably all thinking to themselves, there is no way that we are going to get caught for this. None. Because I think they all assumed that other teams were doing something along those lines, which is possibly misguided. Whatever the case, I look at this, and I really think that he did all those players a favor by not naming any names, because he clearly could have. And the players getting off scot-free in this entire thing, to me, is still the most ridiculous part of all.
From the 206, you guys are suckers. Do you believe politicians, too? Yep, every single time.
Every single time. They always say the truth.
Especially the ones on the Seattle City Council. No, that's not true.
We voted for them. Of course we believe everything they say.
Welcome to the
2020
Hawkskers.
And the winner for best play of this Seahawks season, Paul, I don't think this comes as any surprise. It's not John Ursua.
John Ursua. Oh.
No.
What? As, no, it's got to be John.
In spite of what everybody wants, it's not John Ursua.
Play to the favorites, bro.
It is Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett in the back of the end zone. A touchdown that, well, made it to its own Amazon commercial.
Luke Wilson in motion on the left side. Russell, play fake. Steps back. Has time. Still surveying the field. Now he rolls left. Now he scrambles. Now he's going to throw to the back of the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch. Did he get his feet in? He did. Touchdown, Seahawks. The littlest guy on the field climbed the ladder, kept his toenails in, and Tyler Lockett put six on the board for the Seahawks from 13 yards out.
This is the part of the Oscars where they zoom in on the person who was a finalist but didn't win. That's me, because I wanted John Ursua to win here. And, like, I'm clapping, like, I'm happy, but secretly I want to kill everybody. I'm just
kind of looking around, like, right. Very the purposeful, angry clap. It is Danny Engelhardt. How do the Seahawks view aging talent? How does that impact any surprise cuts on the horizon? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Could the Seahawks kick a couple of contracts off of their books this offseason? There are a couple of interesting ones that I think you got to look at. And Danny, I really wonder, when it comes down to guys who are getting up there in age, and especially guys who are maybe a very big cap figure, if the Seahawks maybe think twice about moving on from a veteran, or if they are somewhat like the Patriots and say, okay, this guy is not performing at the level that we are paying him for, so it's time to move on.
We've seen at times when Seattle's moved on, Max Unger was one guy that they decided to, hey, you know what, it's time for us to sort of cut the cord, and they thought he was physically breaking down. And Max went on and had another 3 to 4 really good years with the New Orleans Saints. And this past year was the first year after he officially retired. Richard Sherman. But there have been other guys. Chris Clemens was a guy that they let go. Red Bryant was a guy that they let go. So they've been very choosy about which players they choose to re-sign, which is why I expect Jermaine Ifedi to leave in free agency. And they've also, it's not that they've refused to let go of veterans, but they haven't let go of as many, honestly, as I would have expected them to.
They've got about $27 million or so that they could tinker around with this offseason just based off of their salary cap this coming season. And it's between center Justin Britt, linebacker KJ Wright, and safety Bradley McDougald. So that's three guys. And I could see all three of them being cut this offseason. But I really want to know what generally the Seahawks do when it comes to a couple of guys like that. This is one of the youngest teams in the NFL still, and I do think that there is some value in having some veteran leadership. And of all those three guys, you can make a strong case as to why all of them should stay. For McDougald, do we know that Marquise Blair is actually going to take a step forward this offseason and, for whatever reason, earn the trust that he was not able to last year? With KJ Wright, in coverage, wasn't a very good season for him, but as far as being an impactful tackler at the end of the season, I thought he played a really good couple of last games. And with Justin Britt, Joey Hunt filled in admirably at center, but Justin Britt provides significantly more force, power, and strength at that position than Hunt was able to bring to the table. So for all of those guys, I mean, if you're parting ways with any of them, you are making a very serious decision, and you will miss them in some capacity.
The best of those, the guy that had the best season of those three players, in my mind, is the one you have the most capable replacement for. KJ Wright, I thought, had the best season of those three veterans. And Cody Barton, I'm always going to screw that up. Taylor Barton was a quarterback who came out of Portland and eventually ended up at Washington. Cody Barton, the weak side linebacker, is the most automatic. You could slide him in there. Justin Britt, do you believe Joey Hunt is capable? He's really tough. He's very, very smart. But there's going to be a couple times every game where he gets physically overpowered. And when you go up against a guy like Fletcher Cox, you're going to have to game plan to give Joey Hunt help. I think that you're most ready to move on from KJ Wright, but in my mind, he's the one of those players that had the best season. The one who I think it's easiest to keep on the team is Bradley McDougal, because $5 million for a starting safety isn't all that much.
Not a whole lot, no.
And he's played strong safety, whereas Quandre Diggs has been your free safety, and honestly, free safety is what they were looking at Marquise Blair at. But if you bring him back, you've got to find a way to get Marquise Blair on the field.
Exactly.
Like, I'm tired of going back and forth between. Look, he made plays when he was out there, and you need to be younger. They need to be meaner. They need to hit harder. Quandre Diggs does that, and I think Marquise Blair would be the perfect pairing for them. So the guy that I think is the easiest to keep might be the guy that would be best just saying, hey, you know what? We're going to go young here. We're going to have young safeties that are going to be on the field, because you're also not sure exactly where Ugo Amadi is. He a nickel? Does he then play some safety? Because he's smaller than what you have for your usual cornerbacks. KJ is the one I'm most torn about, and some of that is because I know what kind of guy he is and how important he is. It might be in the best long-term interest for you to get younger players, a younger player out there in Barton, but KJ was still pretty darn good last season. So that's the one I'm most conflicted about, but I realize that some of that, and maybe even most of that, is personal.
Yeah, with KJ, I think that you do have something left, and especially considering that Michael Kendricks is coming off of that injury that he suffered late in the year, the torn ACL. I mean, you have to wonder next season, okay, well, what is he going to be able to bring anything to the table? And by the way, he's also a free agent, so that makes it even more complicated as far as what you do next. In the case of McDougal, if you look at the safety position, there's one guy that I actually do wonder about, and it's mainly because we've been talking about him this morning, and it's entirely due to the fact that this is a guy that made a really incredible play last year and did have some decent moments before he got shelved for the season with a shoulder injury. You do have one more year of Tedrick Thompson. He's $2.3 million. Do you think he's out of the equation completely?
Because he's got to play his way into it.
I agree on that front. And
he's got to play his way. Like, throw him out there in the preseason and say, hey, show us that you belong out here. Show it. You've got to earn a spot.
So he actually could be a cut, but I don't think it would necessarily be a surprising cut. I think a lot of people right now are almost operating as if Tedrick Thompson isn't even on the roster at this point in time.
Which is the wrong way to do it. You've already made that. He's a sunk cost. You made the draft pick. He's going to be there. And you don't need that salary cap space. With Britt and KJ Wright, those guys' contracts are big enough that if you don't expect them to be on the team, it's worthwhile to cut them now, because you can then use that salary cap space other places. For Tedrick Thompson, and even to a lesser extent Bradley McDougal, you can afford to wait with both of those guys. It's not like their salaries being on your cap is going to prevent you from making additions or things that you want to do. Neither of those, sort of the cap print, neither of them have such a large footprint
right
under the salary cap. And you're not looking at franchise tagging anybody this offseason. So you should have plenty of room underneath the cap.
Definitely. But you could have more. And if you have more, that could help you get another pass rusher. And that's the, I think, trickiest part of this is – because Justin Britt right now is the contract that you look at, and I mean, it's $11.5 million. Do you keep that because of what he was able to bring to the table? Or do you move on? Do you say, all right, Joey Hunt, this is yours to lose, bring in some competition, and maybe use some of that extra cheddar that you got to go after a pass rusher? That's probably the conventional approach, but I do wonder, okay, well, what happens if they have a healthy Justin Britt next season, and how much better could that offensive line have been this past season, especially giving maybe Russell Wilson a couple extra seconds for some of those pass rushers that came right up the middle?
Would you be willing to start Joey Hunt for a whole season? Because to me, that's the question. That's the question you have to answer on Justin Britt.
Did he kill you this past season? I don't think he killed you. So I don't think that you can say that you're losing, that it's a loss if you put him out there. But at the same time, I think you can do a little better. And I think that you need to have a little bit better up the middle because you don't want to have Russell Wilson facing pressure that's coming at him from that point, because then he can't escape. Then he can't do his figure eights in the backfield. It's Danny and Gallant. He is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Coming up next on 710 ESPN Seattle. We took a look at the first weekend of the XFL this past weekend. It was very enjoyable, but does it need star power? We'll dive into that and a lot of other things that we saw this past weekend next.